Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I'm your host, Christopher Hart. And it has been a minute. We've taken a hiatus from the show because we have spent the last 6 months expanding all of our products into new markets. We're in 12 states right now. We're adding new states every week. And we are a very small mom-and-pop brand. Randall Sullivan and myself, as well as Doug and the team over at Gulf Coast Distillers, or Giant Texas, have spent a tremendous amount of time and effort expanding our brands into new markets, and it has been a doozy. So the show will be back full-time. However, I could not pass the opportunity up to talk to the one and only Bryan Cranston. Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston were supposed to both be in studio today. There was a little bit of a urgent thing happening at the hotel, and Aaron couldn't make it, but it's okay. I'm a huge fan. I would love the chance to sit down with him and have a pour, but today I got to have that pour with Mr. Bryan Cranston, which is kind of kismet because it's right on the tail of the new season of Your Honor, which is absolutely stunning. So today I spend some time, we have a few drinks, we open up a birth year bottle, and we talk. So I had a very nice casual conversation with Mr. Cranston, and of course the flood of personal photos coming to social media near you. He's in Houston for a couple days. I wanted to give a quick shout out here again to our online sales, bourbonoutfitter.com. They're a great supporter of ours. You can find Bodega Cat there from Mark and Sam. That's of course available now online. It's also in state distribution in California, Texas, and Kentucky, and coming to about 12 new states very soon. So Bodega Cat, shout out there. And of course, Prideful Goat. So since the last time we spoke, we have launched a new 6-year bourbon for the brand. It's available statewide through Greenlight United here in Texas, and we'll be coming to California, Colorado, all of our states that we're currently with very soon. So shout out to the new 6-year Prideful Goat. And of course, our great supporters over at Waterford Single Malt Irish Whiskey. I love Waterford. I love GlassRev.com. They have done a lot for us. They're still our supporters, and I cannot thank them enough. So without further ado, please welcome Mr. Bryan Cranston. Cheers. Bryan.
Chris.
Thanks so much for doing this.
Good to be here, man.
I'm super excited. We tend to drink a little on the show, and I hear you brought something to drink.
Yes, I brought you a bottle of our Esperin Mezcal, Dos Hombres, that Aaron Paul and I created about 3.5 years ago.
It's been going well. Do you mind if I start?
No, good. Start pouring.
I'm excited. So I made it to Tales of the Cocktail. So Ian Somerhalder and Paul Wesley.
Right.
I've told them they are one of the, I see them everywhere. They're constantly working for their brand.
Yeah.
The only other people I can think of is you and Aaron. You guys are everywhere.
We're everywhere.
And you're here, and you know it's rude for me to pour myself first. So here you go.
Very good. Look at that. It's like your backhand. Like you're a tennis player.
A little bit. So you guys are here. How long in Houston? Cheers, buddy.
We're in Houston for a few days, and then we go on up to Dallas.
Okay.
And
boo.
See the folks up there. Boo. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, man, that smells good. You know,
I love it.
This is going to infect and influence everything we drink for the rest of the time. So just so you know, as we taste through a few things, you will be lingering throughout every the next few experiences.
I like that idea. Well, we know Ian. And
Paul. Yeah, good people.
Paul played my son in a movie. Yeah, and you knew that, though, didn't you?
That was
a little bit of a question you were going to throw at me.
I've got more coming, buddy.
You got a little right hook coming. I saw in your eyes, Chris.
A little gleam.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you guys have actually done, I've seen a few places that actually carry a cocktail using both your items.
Yes.
What's the story there? Did you guys purposely plan that?
We thought this blends really well. Their bourbon, our mezcal, come up with a concoction that people are going to love. And we love those guys. We've known them for a long, long time, and we also love what they're doing. Because that's what we believe. They're workhorses. They have great working ethic, and that's what we do. We just go out. Put your head down, go to work.
Well, speaking of going everywhere, so what all are you hitting? You hitting Dallas for,
Well, we just got back up from
Mexico.
Yeah, we go down as often as we possibly can, and we strengthen our relationship with our mescalero, Gregorio Velasco, who's a great guy. We know and love his family, and it's really a familial operation. It really is, and we're growing. Dos Hombres is growing exponentially now, and so one of the reasons we went down there is to make sure that we can secure land leases and get more agave and build out more palenques, which is the processing plant, and it's been fantastic.
Well, one of the things I was talking that I've heard a lot of people talk about is giving back. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Ian and Paul, they do a lot to give back to some eco charities, but you and Aaron, from my understanding, are actually giving back to the local communities involved in the production of your.
We do. Well, thanks for that. We do. The first thing we did last year was install a state-of-the-art water filtration system. And they had an antiquated one. It's San Luis del Rio. So there is a river there, but you have to filter the water, of course. You have no idea what may be contaminated upstream.
As someone who lives in South Houston, I'm familiar with this process.
Yeah. Yeah,
clean water is important.
Yeah. So, and the thing, you know, something that we take for granted, water, fresh, clean drinking water. We don't think about it. It's always available to us. It's not the case everywhere. And it wasn't the case in this little town. So we wanted to step in and do something for them. And that was the first thing. And it's not just for people who work for us. This is for the entire village and neighboring villages that come over and bring their big 5-gallon jugs and they fill it up, put a cap on it, take it back to their village. It's really sweet, and it's the right thing to do.
It's absolutely. I mean, especially in today's current environment, we have to think about the secondary and you know, the rippling effect of anything we do, especially when it comes to harvesting.
Yeah.
So it was one of the best things I heard about what you guys do is that you're not just giving back, you know, to a, I wouldn't say, you know, a national thing. It's literally benefiting the local community.
Yeah, we wanted to keep it local. In fact, we just launched a new merchandise portfolio on our website, and 100% of all the proceeds after we pay for the merchandise goes to this charity.
What's the website for it?
Doshombres.com, you know, and it's our website, so you can go to the website, go to the merchandise area. Everything you buy there, 100% of everything after our costs go right to the charity. So we're developing quite a war chest right now, and we're really excited because now we go down there. We just came from there, and we ask the town council, what do you need now? And right, the next thing they need is a dispensary for medical emergencies. They need oxygen tanks. They need blood pressure sleeves. They need a supply of medical supplies. And they didn't have that right now. So it's like, oh, that makes sense. And then we want to hire a nurse to come in once a week or so to see anybody who may be feeling a certain way. But these things are they just feel wonderful. And our policy is that it's not mutually exclusive to have a very successful company and still be good stewards to mankind and the environment.
Absolutely. And you guys are you're doing well. I mean, I see Dos Hombres everywhere.
Yeah, we're now, I believe, number four mezcal.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Who's number 1-3?
Well, there's Casamigos is up there.
Of course.
And Del Maguey.
Oh, fantastic,
and
yeah.
And El Silencio. Yeah,
so you guys are crushing it.
Yeah, they're doing all right.
Well, speaking of mezcal, I know you guys have the Tobola. What is there? A little birdie told me there might be something coming down the pipeline. Is there a third SKU coming?
Oh, a little birdie. Oh man, yes, there is.
Just to be clear, before we started recording, you told me to bring it.
You definitely.
I'm asking.
I don't know if I could say exactly what it is, but I could tell you.
Is it the same spirit at least, or is it a different spirit altogether?
Oh no, it's the same spirit.
Okay, so something fun.
It is a blend.
Okay,
and our mezcalero Gregorio especially loves these two agaves.
Okay,
that he wanted to
play with
one spirit out of, and it's unbelievable. It's maybe my favorite.
Are we talking this year?
We're talking this year, possibly, yes.
Okay.
Middle of the year.
Are there any hopes? Because I know I saw one of the interviews you did with, I think, Cigar and Spirits magazine, where you guys discussed, I know Aaron's a bit of a bourbon drinker, and I think prefers a little bit higher proof, and you're the opposite. You prefer a little lower proof, and you guys found a spirit that kind of united the two of you. Is there hopes to do, is this new blend, is it potentially higher or lower alcohol? Or are we talking?
It's going to be higher.
Okay.
It's going to be higher. It's going to be rarer than the Espadine that we have here.
Sure.
This takes about 6 years to mature. And these others that we're blending together is double digits at least.
Okay.
It's going to take a while. So it and they're only in the wild. So they have a policy where you find the plants and you replant two for every one that you take.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're mindful from start to finish.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I wanted to do, and this is kind of a tradition we do on the show, is we hunt down what we like to call birth year bottles.
Oh.
So I believe you were born in 56. Yeah.
1966.
Yes. 56. So what we did is we actually found a bottle.
56?
From your, is that when you were born?
Yeah, 1956.
Thank God, because we got one from that. So this is, wow. So it's interesting. I specifically was mindful of the fact that you like lower proof items. This was bottled the year before you were born. So the liquid inside this glass has been here your entire life. And part of the, and I know people are tired of hearing this, that, you know, hear it every week when we get someone cool on, but everything you've accomplished, the liquid's just in this little time capsule, ready to be opened right now in this moment.
I love this.
And I have one for our buddy Aaron.
Okay.
So I can send it back with you guys, but I found one from his birth year too. So I figured we could share a pour. This brand doesn't exist anymore. Yep. I see JB would love a glass. I got it right here, bud. So this was bottled the year you were born.
That's amazing.
So it's a Guckenheimer. It's a
Guckenheimer.
A German whiskey blend that's 86.8 proof. So it's a little higher than normal.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Thank
now,
you.
There's no promise it's good. That's kind of the that's kind of the catch here. Some old whiskey was garbage. But it's a time capsule. It's a little piece. And I think you've accomplished enough in your life to
it
at least
sweet.
Celebrate.
I'll wait till you are ready.
Here we go. There it is. And the brand's not around anymore, so you're not endorsing something that's competing with you.
A Guckenheimer.
So yeah,
if it was, we'd probably change the name. I drink Guckenheimer.
Oh, it's open. Be careful. Oh. We throw that on there. Cap. There we go. Okay. These old 50s caps are so cool.
All right, well, cheers.
Cheers, buddy. Kind of butterscotchy. You want some? Yeah, absolutely.
It is definitely butterscotchy.
Very butterscotchy. Tasted toffee.
Sweet. Yeah, toffee sweetness.
We went through and we did some digging. We found some Dant that was distilled in 75, which is, these are going for great money nowadays.
Good.
Some of them were a little bigger than we expected. And this was also distilled in 75, or bottled in 75. So we can definitely send you guys some. So Aaron, I know Aaron's a bourbon guy.
He's a mezcal guy now.
Are y'all flying to Dallas or driving?
Flying.
Flying. Does someone have a checked bag? Because you're more than welcome to take this with you.
I may have to find one, yeah.
And so we do a lot of auction sites stuff, you know, little timepieces that are fun. You know, I found some, a couple years ago, we found some brandy that was distilled in 1915.
Wow.
And back then, there were no rules on what you could put on a label. So it was like, oh, this is good for indigestion and heartburn.
Right.
And, you know, and it was like a prescription of a, on the bottle, it says, suggested prescribed amount is one full wine glass. And it was like, oh, okay, so things have changed a little bit. So anyways, I we've got a few more things.
Great.
Where have you gone in terms of spirits? Was mezcal the one that you found with him? Is this something that you'd already had before? Or is this something that you've...
No, I had to be reintroduced to it because when I was in high school and college playing poker with my friends, and nobody had any money, and so someone turned to buy, and they'd bring whatever was cheap. And there was a $4 bottle of mezcal that someone brought over. And worm at the bottom.
Oh, yeah. That was a 90s stereotype back then.
Oh, yeah. It was even earlier. This is talking 70s.
Sure.
Yeah. Cracked it open. It smelled like carpet cleaner.
Yeah.
And it tasted like you'd think carpet cleaner would taste like.
Sure.
So I used it to clean the carpets, but nobody drank it. It was just awful. So you go, you know, 4 decades later, and Aaron Paul and I are in New York City 3 years after the end of Breaking Bad.
Breaking Balls. I got a question about that, too.
Yeah. And we said, oh, man, I don't see you anymore.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's one of those things. You see each other all the time for 7 years, then you go your separate way. And then, you know, just like high school or college. And so he said, what about getting into the booze business? We can do, mezcal. And so I triggered back to that experience in high school, and I thought, ugh, mezcal, what a terrible idea. Until we went to a mezcal bar and sat there and drank some of the most beautiful spirit I have ever put in my mouth. I mean, it was astonishing to me the variety that there was.
I had a blue tequila incident in my younger years, so I'm familiar with the scarring. The problem with American drinking culture of the past is it was usually for a purpose. You're getting to a point. Was filler. It was Seagram's 7 and 7, or whatever the case might be.
Jack and Coke, and
And we've evolved to a point where there's a ton of beautiful art that's making its way into the U.S. either made here or imported. We've got a cognac that we make we bottle it, we sourced it. There are so many beautiful things that are being produced right now are absolutely, I think, reshaping the idea of what it is to drink without the old perception. Mm-hmm. You ask my mother or my grandmother, who were Pentecostal, what the perception of artistically drinking, they're going to laugh you out and, say the devil's got them.
That's right.
So it's evolved. Our perception has evolved. We've got the third skew. I wrote insane, serious talent, but I don't know what the question was. I know what it was. So I learned of you, like most people my age, from Malcolm in the Middle. Mm. You are hilarious. And I think over time, you've really made a name for yourself as a very, very serious... I mean, your honor is incredible, by the way. We watched the first episode a couple nights ago. It's tremendous. So I'm curious, two things. One of these is, half of this question is David over here. Do you have a preference that means more to you, comedically or serious? And if so, do you ever take a piece of that character with you? As someone who is... developing in the 90s and early 2000s, trying to figure out who I was as a person, you would read books of how to be a leader or how to do this, and you would adopt certain personality traits because you think this is what successful people do.
Yeah.
Are there character aspects that you have, that you've just found, I really like this, and you take it with you and maybe see that in your day-to-day life?
I suppose.
Hopefully
it's
not meth-making.
It's not a conscious thing. But sometimes it seeps into your subconscious and you bring it home. There's those occasions when you're working on a character and you get, it could be a dynamic character that is short and aggressive and something, and I may come home being a little short or aggressive, and my wife's going, hey, you're not at work.
Turn it off, Lewis.
Shut it down. And you're like, oh, yeah, what was I doing? Oh, yeah, okay, sorry. And that helps because my wife was an actor too, so she knows the process and what you go through. You try not to borrow anything, really. There's always going to be the common denominator that it's played by the same guy. Both Walter White and Hal and Michael Desiato on Your Honor played by the same person. So, but years come in, and if I were to do Hal from Malcolm in the Middle again, it would be different because I'm 20 years older than I was.
And have done a lot of characters since then.
Yeah, done a lot of different things, more life experience and that thing. So you try to find the distinction between characters.
So it's one of the things that I think, it's weird to me to see you as someone who's I mean, there's been a lot of behind the scenes shenanigans as well, right? Like, I've heard that you and Aaron have played a lot of pranks on each other. In fact, I found a nice little thread from 2015 and Ask Me Anything that you did on Reddit where you explained that there was a scene involving a gun.
Okay.
Do you remember this?
I remember it.
Yeah. So it's weird to me to think that you don't – do you prefer one over the other? Comedy versus serious?
Well, I'll tell you, yeah, I mean, in the process of making a project, you'll have more fun doing a comedy. That's just inherently true. Probably the most fun I've ever had on a movie or a television series was a movie I did called Why Him with James Franco. And
oh, we watched that last night.
Did you?
Yeah, we watched it again last night because we were trying to unwind and didn't want something heavy.
Yeah.
And we watched Your Honor, the first episode of season two, and we said, well, what? I'm seeing Brian tomorrow, so you know, let's go back and see if we can find something funny. And it was great. I mean, specifically the bidet scene really struck my wife.
Well, that scene when I was stuck on the toilet and Keegan-Michael Key comes in to fix it. There is on record 45 minutes of unusable
footage
film. Yeah,
of just ad-libbing and
of me cracking up, of me. And Keegan knew this.
Sure.
So is it if this microphone was my face and I'm trying to keep a straight face and be upset that he has to come in and try to fix
the bidet?
He would go, okay, let's see what might be wrong here.
Yeah. Perfectly messing with you.
And he's just messing with me. And I ended up, and not joking, the upstage side of my mouth, which is the side furthest away from the camera, I was biting down on my inside of my cheek to try not to laugh.
To try to hurt.
Doing one of those and just biting down on it until I opened up my cheek inside. And it's like, you know, like when you accidentally chew your cheek open when you're chewing. And I did it and it opened up and it's like, oh my God.
This blood?
There was a little blood. Blood, sweat, and tears, I'm telling you. But so the difference is you do innately have more fun because you're cracking up, and your job, your responsibility at that time is to bring funny. So you're thinking of things that are funny. You're throwing things in. And so a lot of what we did on Why Him was improvisation. We shot the scenes, then we would improv and go in there and do some stuff and throw it out there, and we're making each other laugh. It was great.
Yeah, it's the absolute, blooper reels in general are great. And of course, serious shows are great. But I think seeing, I don't know, again, there's something nostalgic about it to me when I see you in something silly because of Hal. It was such a big part of my childhood. Since Aaron's not here, I think it's only fair that we open his bottle of 1975 Dant.
Ooh, let's do it.
What's that? Oh, yeah. Dant, it's crazy. So, like Old Crow is perceived as a very, I'd say, a bottom shelf brand now. But Old Crow was actually part of the Mad Men era of marketing changes. There used to be an old rule in bourbon that you don't use women to sell whiskey or spirits. And it stopped around 1959 because it was perceived as a cheapskate or a cheap shot to sell sex over something that should be good on its own. And Old Crow, Dant, all those from those era where they've changed that idea and said, no, we're going to sell it because it's meant to be sold and it's good. In fact, Old Crow actually created a briefcase bottle. So guys can put it in their briefcase to work. It was flat. It fit inside a briefcase, you know. So these old Dusties are some of the most incredible old bottles. That's 100 proof. So a little bit warmer. Smaller sips.
Wow.
I thought, I was trying to think of things specifically that I think would be really interesting, and that's a great bottle. It's a little lower shelf nowadays, but back then it was absolutely incredible. Speaking of incredible, do you guys have any plans of moving into the RTD space? Canned drinks, mezcal-based drinks?
There's a lot of talk about that. Our main focus has been on our SKUs. We have the flagship Espadín, and we have our Tobala. And then we're coming out with an ensemble.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be called that. But when we're looking at bottle designs right now and things like that.
Oh, it might be a different shape even.
Yeah, yeah. Well, our Tobola is a different bottle altogether than our Espadi. And
you guys only do about 300 of those a year, right?
1,600 bottles of Tobola a year.
What's 300 like times? 400, I was thinking 300 cases. So
400 bottles per quarter, basically, gotcha. Is when we, as fast and as much, because it takes about 25 years for a Tobola plant to be mature. So, and they're small. The piñas that come out of an Espadín, or matter of fact, all the tequila, the blue agave, they're huge. So the yields are all massive. But Tobola, it's a small plant.
Yeah, it's very small. It's like the difference between barley a lot used in six-row, two-row barley used in whiskey making.
Whiskey.
Yeah, so six-row yields more seeds, but they're much, much smaller.
Hmm.
They don't yield as much in terms of fermentation.
Yeah.
Two-row, much larger seeds, a little bit different to work with.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been fascinated with the distilled spirits. In its basic form, you talk about what cognac is versus what whiskey is. It's whiskey made from grapes, or whiskey made from grain, or whiskey made from agave. It's the same distillation. It's not the exact same process, but the idea of fermentation, taking decades for the plants to mature, right, is very similar to our wood issue.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of which, I was going to ask this. Are you guys ever planning on doing a barrel finishing, like arrested agave,
An añejo or
sure,
reposado? We're going to experiment with that. In fact, we have some aging going on right now.
So, interesting.
I can assure you that we're going to run it through our own taste test. And if it passes, if we love it, then we'll consider it. But if not, we'll just move on.
Yeah. Well, I think the important thing for most people to see is how involved that you guys are. The entire idea of a celebrity brand, but the fact that you guys are experimenting and sourcing really old plants, I'm excited to see what barrel aged Dos Hombres comes out with.
I would be very excited to see that too, and there's a tremendous anticipation for that, not only perhaps from the public but from us. We're wondering, what is this going to taste like? Obviously the color will change. Take the influence from the oak barrels and become amber.
Are you guys doing new oak or ex-bourbon?
Ex-bourbon. And some new oak. We change it up a little bit.
Play around with it.
Yeah.
So when y'all go down there, like to Mexico, are you sampling stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's the best part of the job.
That's so good. Right out of the source, too. It's dripping out of the distillation process, and you interrupt the flow.
Right.
It just, so good.
That's one of the things that sucks with whiskey is you have to wait. Texas has been developing this process for a very short period of time, but we're talking most Texas whiskeys are 4 to 6 years old. You guys get to immediately see results, immediately taste it, immediately bottle it.
Yep.
And it's a much shorter process.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask what your daughter's an actress.
Yeah.
I'm a father of four myself.
Wow.
Three girls, a couple teenagers. I wanted to ask you specifically about, like, our daughters spirits are such a big part of our life that we don't actually spend a ton of time. Like, when I was younger, it was the rebellious phase, right? The Pentecostal rebellion. I wanted to drink, but our girls couldn't care less, but they're interested in getting in the business side of things. And I'm curious, is there anything that you immediately thought of, any pitfalls or focus issues, things that when your daughter wanted to get into this that you would speak to her about, like noticing certain things? Like, for instance, with our daughters, we had to take a precautionary step and discuss, hey, if you're going to get into this, you have to be mindful of responsibility and being careful of certain things because, spirits can be, I'm curious if there were any, tips or tricks or things that you immediately thought of, like biting the cheek, something that you might have spoken to your daughter on?
When you think about it, it's a very common experience. My wife and I were actors for years and years. We both over 40 years in the business. So our daughter going into the business being an actor is like the family business. It's like if we were a plumbing supply company or pool service.
Didn't really think about it.
No,
second nature.
The only thing, and as a dad yourself, the only thing that I would ever want my child to do is to, whatever it is, be passionate about it. If you can find a pathway to your passion and merge that with employment, man, that is everything, right?
I mean, no, absolutely. I remember you noting that one of your question and answers was that I'm thankful, or I'm speaking as you here, I'm thankful for the fact that my entire career I've been able to work and make a living doing this. You may have said almost my entire career. I think maybe the early years were a little...
Since I was 25 years old, yeah. That's all I've done is act. Yeah.
I know we're limited on time. I got one last question, and I'm hoping I can make it stretch 2 minutes. I don't know if it's been announced yet, so say what you can. But am I hearing rumors that you're in the Marvel universe? Is that happening?
There's always rumors that I'm in the Marvel universe.
Correct.
And that's where it's... It stays for quite a long time now.
Yeah,
I don't know where it started. I didn't plant it, but I've been asked about it, and it's like
a million times.
Doing a Marvel movie. Yeah, I'd be open to that.
Yeah, I think it's something that gets asked a lot, but I feel like depending on when you ask, you may get the correct answer. So it's like I'm going to ask it, even though I know you've been asked about it.
Been asked about it, but there's really no answer to it. I'd be open to it, but so far I haven't been approached.
I had found a duplicate article for both you and Aaron that was like, it's official. These guys have joined through insider resources. There you guys have joined the Marvel, yeah.
What's the bald character in Superman?
Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor. So because when I was bald doing Breaking Bad, I think that's the easy way. It's the low-hanging fruit. Bald, Lex Luthor.
Serious guy, bad guy.
Yeah, it's like, come on.
Have you ever thought about putting Dosombres in one of your shows? Has that ever come up?
We'll do some product placement in it.
I know Ryan Bingham from Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Buddy of mine is doing he wants to do everything from Texas. Texas glass, Texas labels. It's been in Yellowstone a few times, and I was thinking, are we going to see Dosombres anything soon?
Yeah, but why Texas and Yellowstone?
Well, sorry, Ryan Bingham was born and raised in West Texas.
Okay.
And spent a lot of time in Houston. He's a Texas country star. And
it takes place in Wyoming.
He's from Yellowstone.
Oh my
but
God.
The
this
product
is getting complicated.
No, no, no. The product isn't based on the show. The product's based on him. He's a Texas music star, so he's wanting
inappropriate in placing his booze and glasses in a show that takes place
in like Wyoming or something,
1,000 miles away.
Well, I just I feel like you've outsmarted me here, and this is not fair.
No,
this is my show. I think what he was wanting to do was put it out there. Dosombres is, I feel like I see it everywhere now.
We're growing, and our issue now is how to manage that, because we take the old fashioned adage of measure twice and cut once, and so we Aaron and I interview every single candidate to be an employee of our company, and we want to see if we can bring the right culture in too, because we're family guys, and we want to be able to all have a great time with this spirit. And
wait, so not only
sell
do you guys give back to the community, you also actually interview everyone that joins the company?
Oh, this is not a vanity production. Aaron and I, there's not a day that goes by that we're not on emails and scheduling meetings and tours and things like that. We were just talking about that in the car coming over.
That's incredible, and that is exactly what made me think of Paul Wesley and Ian Somerhalder.
Yeah.
It made me think of them because you guys are not only hitting the road and involved in every step of the process, but I had no idea that you guys were actually interviewing people to be a part of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's our company. We started it. We went down to Oaxaca to find the juice ourselves. It was self-funded. We didn't have anybody sponsoring us or supporting us. There's no big brother kind of thing. We're seeing if we can find something that we could both be passionate about. And we really didn't know if we were going to find Dosombres or what would become Dosombres. And instead of finding it, this spirit is so old, it found us in more appropriate terminology. It has been there for hundreds of years. It is artisanal. which means we can't use any modern technology in the process of this. Where we make this in Oaxaca, Mexico, there's no electricity. There's no running water. You're stepping back in time, and they didn't need that to make artisanal mezcal back in the days.
Yeah, it's one of the things that we are really good as humans is finding a way to make booze. Yeah, regardless
in
of
good times and bad,
right, absolutely. Yeah. Well, listen, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks,
I enjoyed having a moment. Enjoy your time here in Houston. The food's really good, better than Dallas. So not to make another shot at that shitty city, but I think that you'll enjoy your time here.
So, what do you think of the Cowboys?
You're
just upset because
this show's on ESPN, and I could care less about football, but I like taking shots at Dallas, so I'm mad. Thanks so much for doing
this, Chris. Appreciate it, man. Thank you.